The headlines as the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on Gaza continues for the 162nd day. A new airstrike on a refugee camp kills at least 36 Palestinians. The onslaught on Gaza is not preventing Israel from committing more atrocities in the occupied West Bank as the regime forces conduct new violent raids. And people go to polling stations across Russia on a second day of presidential elections. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisu Mishahmadi and these are our top stories this hour. Dozens more Palestinians are killed as the Israeli regime keeps going ahead with its genocidal war on the besieged Gaza Strip, which is now in its 162nd day. In the latest airstrikes, the Israeli military has targeted the Al-Nusrayat refugee camp, leaving at least 36 people dead. Many people were also killed or injured in yet another bombing of Rafah, a southern city that once Israel designated as safe for displaced Palestinians. Rafah has been targeted frequently amid the regime's threats that it will conduct a ground operation there. Since the onset of the Israeli war on Gaza in early October, over 31,500 Palestinians have been killed, most of them women and children. Our correspondent joined us earlier from central Gaza, the city of Deir al-Bala, to update us on the situation in the besieged territory.
Actually, the Israeli massacres were continued and were continued over the last night as the swinging Israeli attacks continued and maintained over several areas of Gaza Strip, from Beit Hanun city in the north to Rafah city in the south. Continuous Israeli airstrikes harvested more lives of the Palestinian civilians. Let's begin from the central area of Gaza Strip, as the Israeli occupation warplanes carried out several Israeli airstrikes against the residential buildings. At least four residential buildings were destroyed in the central area of Gaza Strip, particularly in Al-Nusrayat refugee camp. At least 37 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed in Al-Nusrayat after the Israeli occupation forces targeted a residential building in Al-Nusrayat refugee camp. As you can see here, the scene in the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital, the people are gathering to mourn those people and to take these dead bodies to their last destination after the Israeli occupation forces mercilessly massacred them while they were inside their houses. These are the dead bodies of those Palestinian civilians, including the women, children, and elderly. They were massacred over the last night in Al-Nusrayat and Deir al-Balah city. So it's the same scene, it's the same crime reiterated on a daily basis by the Israeli occupation forces. So it's another crime added to the continuous record and continuous Israeli crime.
Israel's genocidal war on Gaza has cast a somber tone over this year's holy month of Ramadan in the besieged Strip. Palestinians there are in dire need of food, grappling with the devastating impacts of relentless Israeli bombardment and crippling siege. Our correspondent, Moti Abu Musabib, has talked to some of the displaced Palestinians there.
I was displaced after the Israeli forces attacked our neighborhood. As you can see, we live in these tents made of plastic and fabric. We have nothing to eat but some canned food, which is the only thing that we have been eating for roughly 6 months. We don't even have gas to cook. I have 6 children and I don't know what to feed them.
I have been displaced from the Nusayrat refugee camp. I have 5 children. I came from Algeria to visit Gaza and then the war erupted. I hadn't expected that the situation could be as bad as it is. The situation is beyond catastrophic here, as people can barely find food, especially in this holy month of Ramadan.
This Ramadan is completely different from previous years. My 5 kids and I have been displaced from Gaza City while my husband is still there. We have no source of food. The amount of food provided by charities is also scarce. We're devastated and deprived of our basic needs.
I live here with my 8 children. Our lives are tragic. The situation is getting worse day by day. We're struggling to cope with this unbearable condition amid the relentless bombardment and bloodshed. In Ramadan, we are completely relying on the food provided by donors. Sometimes the food is scarce and we get nothing to eat. Eating canned food has also made us sick.
We have been displaced from northern Gaza. There are 7 of us living here. We are suffering a lot. The weather is too cold and there are no gas supplies. Because of that, I have to make a fire to cook food. Most of the time, we find no food or milk for the children. They always cry and get sick. The Israeli war has destroyed everything in Gaza.
A representative of the United Nations Population Fund, that is for Palestine, has expressed deep concern about the situation of newborns in Gaza amid the ongoing Israeli onslaught on the besieged Strip.
Personally, leaving Gaza this week, terrified for the 1 million women and girls of Gaza, 650,000 of reproductive age, of menstruating age, and most especially for the 180 women who are giving birth every single day in Gaza. We need to have unfettered access, safe, at scale, with multiple entry points. So there's a lot more conditions on the ground that would need to be provided to ensure that the assistance can get to where it's most needed.
Allen warned on Friday that the humanitarian situation in Gaza is a nightmare for mothers and babies, with doctors reporting abnormal size and sick newborns. He said that doctors also point to a tragic situation related to stillbirths and neonatal deaths caused by malnutrition, dehydration, and complications. He also said the numbers of complicated deliveries are roughly twice as mothers are stressed, fearful, and exhausted, and caregivers often lack the necessary supplies. Allen described the situation in Gaza as a crisis of humanity and, quote-unquote, beyond catastrophic, adding that those children should be wrapped in their mother's arms, not in body bags. Israel's genocidal war in Gaza has killed nearly 31,000 civilians, most of them women and children. And Israeli troops have carried out fresh incursions into several towns and neighborhoods across the occupied West Bank. We were earlier joined by our correspondent in Ramallah, Muna Kendall, who gave us more details.
Israeli soldiers stormed several neighborhoods and towns in Tulkarem, and this time they arrested a number of Palestinians, mainly in the village of Ramin. Israeli forces also stormed several neighborhoods and towns in Qalqilia. The Israeli soldiers stormed the homes of Palestinian prisoners, and they caused severe damage inside the homes and destruction. And at the same time, they interrogated the family members of those Palestinian prisoners. Last night, you have to mention that the Israeli forces carried out a large-scale operation in several areas in Jenin. The Israelis stormed the town of Al-Jalami, Arbouni, and other areas north-east Jenin. And the Israelis had also stormed the town of Arabi, south Jenin. The exact number of the Palestinians who had been detained across the occupied West Bank last night and this morning has not been revealed yet, but according to a recent report by the Prisoners Society, 7,600 Palestinians had been detained since the 7th of October here in the occupied West Bank.
Moving on, Jordanians have staged yet another rally in the capital Amman in support of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip amid the ongoing Israeli genocide there. Demonstrators on Friday called on their government to supply Gazans with more humanitarian aid. They chanted anti-Israeli slogans and held banners reading "To break the war of starvation and bridge to northern Gaza." The protesters accused the Jordanian government of doing not enough, arguing that it has a duty to fulfill its obligation towards Palestinians in distress. Jordan, that is hosting 2.4 million Palestinian refugees, has witnessed similar rallies in solidarity with Gazans since Israel launched its war on the besieged Strip. Meanwhile, Canada witnessed similar rallies with protesters in Toronto denouncing Prime Minister Justin Trudeau for his stance towards the Israeli bloodshed in Palestine.
For the people of Palestine in Gaza, in Rafah, they are being shot dead from above, from the land, and from anywhere. And that's why we are here to say, Justin Trudeau, you are complicit in the ongoing genocide in Rafah, Gaza.
Protesters waved Palestinian flags, chanted slogans, and carried banners reading Genocide Justin and Genocide is not self-defense. They also called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. The protesters gathered outside an election fundraising event for the ruling party of Prime Minister Trudeau. People around the world keep hitting the streets to pressurize their respective governments to help end the Israeli war on Gaza. Now that is amid worsening humanitarian crisis in the besieged Palestinian territory and looming Israeli ground invasion of Rafah, a southern Gaza city crammed with about 1.5 million people. Palestine solidarity activists in Austria are facing fines for their participation in protests against Israeli genocide in Gaza. However, they have not backed down, our correspondent reports.
The first protest in support of the Palestinian resistance was held in Vienna on October 11th. The police had banned the demonstration and issued over 300 fines for participating in what they called an unlawful assembly.
Since this ongoing genocide in Gaza, we are protesting constantly in Austria, and we've got already over 13 protests banned by the Austrian government.
Silencing the Palestinian solidarity movement by prohibiting their public actions failed and most charges were dropped. Since then, the solidarity movement has been growing. Mass demonstrations are organized every Saturday and pickets and information stalls are held throughout Vienna almost daily. For some activists, this kind of action is not enough.
We are trying to invent new forms of protest to remind the public opinion, the society here, that there is a war and a massacre going on in Palestine. So we are inventing new forms of protest, with flash mobs, with surprise actions in stations, in public places.
One of the activists was recently fined €300 for participating in the protest in the parliament in January. So far, hundreds of activists have been charged, some of them several times. They say this is a significant financial burden for speaking out against the US-Israeli genocide.
The simple slogan, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. This slogan is currently banned by the Austrian government, and we're facing numerous cancellations and prohibitions of protests, and hundreds of protesters already got charges.
The activists aim to conquer the charges with a political campaign to defend their right to protest for a free Palestine from the river to the sea. On Friday, they protested outside UN headquarters during US Foreign Secretary Antony Blinken's visit to Vienna.
Today, Foreign Secretary of the United States is here in Austria in the UN premises, and we are taking to the street here to protest against his support to genocide.
Also, a mass demonstration is called for Saturday in Austria's capital.
Pro-Palestinian activists are getting fined by police for the protest in Austria. Observers say this aims to silence the activists. However, Palestinian solidarity activists are not backing down and campaigning to raise awareness of the repression. Dieter Reinisch from Vienna.
Senior figures from the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas and Yemen's Ansarullah have reportedly held a meeting recently to discuss the ongoing Israeli bloodshed in Gaza. According to reports, leaders of Gaza-based Islamic Jihad movement also participated in the talks held in an undisclosed location last week. In the meeting, representatives from the resistance groups discussed mechanisms to coordinate their actions in the wake of Israel's genocide in Gaza. They also talked about a possible Israeli ground invasion of Gaza's southern city of Rafah. Yemen's anti-Israel operation were also on the agenda. During the talk, said the Ansarullah movement vowed to continue its support for the Palestinian resistance by targeting Israeli-linked ships in and around the Red Sea. On the second day of the Russian presidential election, voters across the country cast their ballots in a process that is all but certain to extend President Vladimir Putin's rule by another 6 years. Voting is taking place at polling stations across Russia's 11 time zones, including online balloting in the regions that broke away from Ukraine and rejoined the Russian Federation. Around 114 million Russians are eligible to vote in this year's election, and that will continue until Sunday. In the run-up to the vote, Putin boasted about battlefield successes in Ukraine, where the Russian troops have recently made gains. He also cited economic growth, saying that the country's economy has proven to be resilient despite Western sanctions. Putin's victory appears highly probable, as none of the three other candidates in the race is a prominent challenger. The current election marks the eighth presidential election in Russia. This will be Putin's fifth term as president. And Tehran has described as insolent the latest comments made by a former Israeli military official about partitioning Iran. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said enemies will take their dream of disintegrating Iran to the grave. He said Iranians have sacrificed hundreds of thousands of lives in the past 45 years to remain unified, strong, and powerful. Kanani said this is not the first time the Zionist enemy makes such rude comments, saying such statements indicate the evil intentions of Iran's enemies towards the country. Modrechi Kadar, a former Israeli military intelligence officer, proposed a regime change in Iran instigated by ethnic minorities. Kadar has suggested that Iran should be disintegrated into 5 to 6 ethnic states. And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
The Limelight.
According to a report, hundreds of people, including children and victims of trafficking and torture, have been convicted and jailed for arriving in the United Kingdom in small boats to claim asylum. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. According to a new report, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's asylum laws have introduced a perma-backlog of up to 55,000 people who cannot have their claims processed and risk being left indefinitely in taxpayer-funded temporary accommodation. The Institute for Public Policy Research said that anyone arriving in the United Kingdom via irregular means after 20th of July 2023 cannot have their claim processed and instead will be removed to their home country or to a third country such as Rwanda following the introduction of the Illegal Migration Act. At the same time, pre-existing laws mean that irregular arrivals since 7th of March 2023 cannot be given permission to stay. The think tank said reports suggest that these claims are also on hold. The report says it is highly doubtful that the small country of Rwanda will ever be able to accept tens of thousands of people. Marley Morris, Associate Director for Migration at the Institute for Public Policy Research, said chaos in the Home Office has led to tens of thousands of asylum seekers stuck in a perma-backlog, unable to get on with their lives and costing the taxpayer millions of pounds. This was an entirely predictable outcome of the Illegal Migration Act. The only way to escape this situation is for the Home Office to start processing claims. The Institute for Public Policy Research's warning came as James Cleverly, the Home Secretary, said wealthy nations must help developing ones avoid hemorrhaging people. In a speech in New York on Tuesday, 27th of February, James Cleverly said Western powers must help would-be migrants to stay and thrive at home in order to stem the international migration crisis. Answering questions afterwards, he said there could be large-scale migration to Europe from Africa, the Indian subcontinent and Southeast Asia, as they become richer and people who were previously too poor to consider relocation acquired the financial means to do so. James Cleverly said, as these parts of the world become wealthier, there may be an initial but potentially temporary pressure for large-scale human movement to the high GDP per capita countries. He argued that Western powers should support these countries in ensuring they are safe and prosperous to prevent an outflow of people and a devastating talent drain. He said, "If you're a country with great aspiration for your future, but what you're synonymous for is just people hemorrhaging from your country, that contradicts your message." An expert in migration questioned James Cleverly's plan. Madeleine Sumption, the director of the Migration Observatory, said research suggested development policies were not an effective way to reduce migration. She added, "It's usually not the very poorest people who migrate, because migrating requires resources. So if low-income countries get richer, sometimes that leads to more migration and not less." She added, "Countries have to become pretty wealthy before people stop wanting to emigrate in substantial numbers. If governments knew how to implement development policies that could achieve that, they'd have done it already." A spokesperson for the Home Office claimed, "We met the Prime Minister's pledge to clear the legacy backlog of asylum cases made before 28th of June 2022, and all of those cases have been reviewed. Now we're working through the next cohort of applications." The spokesperson asserted, "We're beginning to implement measures in the Illegal Migration Act following the Supreme Court judgment on Rwanda and alongside the Safety of Rwanda Bill going through Parliament, delivering against this government's priority of tackling illegal migration." British newspaper The Daily Mail has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to a report, hundreds of people, including children and victims of trafficking and torture, have been convicted and jailed for arriving in the United Kingdom in small boats to claim asylum. The prosecutions have largely slipped under the radar, although the issue has been highlighted by the case of the Senegalese teenager Ebrahima Ba. He was sentenced to 9 years and 6 months detention after being convicted of 4 counts of manslaughter and 1 of facilitating a breach of immigration law after steering an overcrowded dinghy that got into difficulty, leading to the drowning of at least 4 people. The report, called No Such Thing as Justice Here, from the Centre for Criminology at the University of Oxford and Border Criminologists, examined the cases of people who have been imprisoned for their arrival on a small boat since the Nationality and Borders Act of 2022 came into force. It used a mix of attendance at more than 100 court hearings, as well as freedom of information requests and interviews with lawyers, convicted asylum seekers, convicted and interpreters. The non-governmental organisations Humans for Rights Network, Captains Support UK and Refugee Legal Support contributed to the report. It found that the prosecutions have not acted as a deterrent for channel crossings and calls for an end to criminalisation at the border. Between June of 2022 and October of 2023, 253 people were convicted under Section 24 of the 1971 Immigration Act for illegal entry and 7 under Section 25 of that Act for facilitation. According to the research, those targeted for prosecution were either boat drivers like Ebrahima Ba or had immigration history in the United Kingdom, such as having made a previous visa application. In 2021, a series of successful appeals overturned prosecutions under these sections of the 1971 Immigration Act. In response, in June of 2022, the Nationality and Borders Act expanded the scope of criminal offences relating to irregular arrival to the United Kingdom. The offence of illegal arrival was introduced, with a maximum sentence of 4 years imprisonment, and the offence of facilitation was expanded, with a maximum sentence increased from 14 years to life imprisonment. In 2022, 1 person for every 10 boats was arrested for their alleged role in steering. In 2023, this increased to 1 for every 7 boats. People have been identified as having their hand on the tiller for many reasons, including having boating experience, steering in return for discounted passage, taking it in turns, or being under duress. Those arrested included people from countries with a high asylum grant rate, including Sudan, South Sudan, Afghanistan, Eritrea, and Syria. Children in age disputes have been charged as adults with the offences of illegal arrival and facilitation for their alleged role in steering boats across the channel. Humans for Rights Network has identified 15 age-disputed children who were wrongly treated as adults following Home Office age assessments and charged with these new offences, with 14 of them spending time in adult prison. They believe there are likely to be more cases. So far, 5 have been confirmed to be children, and the outcome of age assessments is awaited for the others.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
Allah, ma Allah.
humanity.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is Hussein Latifi and you're listening to a program for humanity from IRIB English Radio. In this program, we talk about different dimensions of the human soul and the human being according to the verses and teachings of the Holy Quran. In the previous episode, we ended up talking about human intellect and how different things can stop human intellect from functioning properly as the leader and as the main command center of the human being. We said in an ideal picture, an image of a perfect man in the Holy Quran, a perfect man is a person who acts based on the decree of the reason and not based on the decree of other faculties or other desires that are there in the human being. Many people confuse the two. They think it is the reason that they're following, while at the same time, this sometimes it's the desire that has captivated the reason. It is the conceit and arrogance that has captivated the reason, and the person thinks this is the reasonable choice, while at the end of the day, we realize that this is according to the carnal desire of the person, and the carnal desire has taken as hostage the reason and intellect. Intellect is functioning as a maid and as a servant to the carnal desires. So we talked about all of this, and one of the threats, one of the things that stops reason from functioning properly, we said, is following blindly the tradition. Blind obedience to the tradition, blind obedience to social norms and social habits. And we said that it's not proper, it's not correct to fight with all social norms, as some arrogant people do, but at the same time, it's not correct to follow social norms altogether without any personal and independent evaluation, according to the verses of the Holy Quran and according to the hadith that we have. We have to distinguish the last hadith that we recited, لا تكون أما, do not be أما, do not be a person who says, I'm with people. Always, whatever that he does, he explains, he justifies it by being with people. No, if somebody commits a bad thing, a sin, he cannot justify it just by saying everybody else does it. So if everybody else does something wrong, it doesn't justify my action. In another verse in the Holy Quran, we recite, عَلَيْكُمْ أَنفُسَكُمْ لَيَضُرُّكُمْ مَنْ ضَلَّ إِذَا اهْتَدَيْتُمْ. O believers, be careful about yourselves. Do not think that people, other people who go astray, they're going to harm you, or they can, you can justify your actions because of those people. If you do something good and the rest of the people, they do something bad, it's up to them. You should take care of yourself and your actions. So another verse that talks about this topic, being careful and not blindly following the tradition, is this verse that says, وَإِذَا قِيلَ لَهُمْ تَعَالَوْا إِلَى مَا أَنزَلَ اللَّهُ وَإِلَى الرَّسُولِ قَالُوا حَسْبُنَا مَا وَجَدْنَا عَلَيْهَا آبَاءَنَا. When they are told, come to the what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has revealed, and is revealed to his prophet, his apostle, they say, okay, whatever that we have found with our forefathers, in the tradition of our fathers, would be enough for us. حَسْبُنَا. أَوَلَوْ كَانَ أَبُهُمْ لَا يَعْلَمُونَ شَيْئًا. Even if their fathers didn't know anything. So in the previous verse, it was لا يعقلون شيئاً. Quran says, how, for how long or to what extent do you want to follow the tradition? Even if the tradition is against reason, you want to follow it? And here Quran says, even if the tradition is based on ignorance, the tradition is based on not knowing, lacking knowledge, still you want to follow that tradition? لا يعلمون شيئاً ولا يهتدون. And the tradition is based on misguidance, you want to still follow it? So, yes, this also is a beautiful verse, that the main criterion for following and not following should not be for that thing to be part of the tradition. In contrast, it should be the fact that it is in accordance with knowledge or with reason. We're going to have a break and come back to continue our discussion.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at English Radio irib.ir.
Welcome back. This is Hussein Latifi, and you're listening to your program for Humanity from IRIB English Radio. In the first episode, we were talking about the verses of the Holy Quran talking about blind following the social habits and social norms. We are left with one last verse in this topic. The verse is, فَلَا تَكُ فِي مِرْيَةٍ مِمَّا يَعْبُدُ هَؤُلَاء. Do not be in doubt about what these people worship, the idols that they used to worship. مَا يَعْبُدُونَ إِلَّا كَمَا يَعْبُدَ أَبَاهُمْ. They only do that, they worship idols, because their forefathers also did the same thing. مِنْ قَبْلُ. So, sometimes you see some behaviors from some people, and then you wonder, maybe this has some root, maybe this has... Maybe there's a philosophy behind this, maybe there's a wisdom, because you see such a great number of people are doing it and constantly. And so you wonder, maybe this is something great, some philosophy. But then when you ask them, you realize that, well, they don't have any justification for it, except that this is, we found it among the common practices of our forefathers, I don't know, whatever. So Quran says, do not have doubt in terms of thinking that there is a great, for example, philosophy behind these behaviors. No, they're empty behaviors. Behaviors that are, there is a word for that in English, if I remember it correctly, a herd practice or herd behavior, something like this. When a sheep in a herd does something, the rest of the herd do that without even thinking what would be, what is the benefit, what's the use, what's the point in that. They just see other ships are doing, then they follow. So sometimes this happens, herd behavior among people as well. And the person who observes the situation thinks that maybe there's something going on, maybe there's a point in that. But once you do your investigation, you ask people about their motivation for that, you realize that it's nothing, it's because of that fear that some people have, that if I don't follow the social norms, if I will be rejected, or if I'll be left lonely, something like that. Well, Quran says these are not correct bases for choosing your identity, your behavioral pattern, your personality, because at the end of the day, what we do builds who we are. And this is not something we should take lightly. This is something that has to do a lot of things, has to do with our eternal life, with the life that we have after this life, because the things that we do have ramifications, have consequences, though we don't see them now. But at the end of the day, a person might look at his personality, his identity, and a great deal of that personality and identity is made and built because of these kinds of, I don't know, empty following or blind following of the tradition or social habits. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to help us have our own individual and independent evaluation of these situations and behaviors. Thank you very much for listening. Inshallah, until next episode. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
صلى الله على النبي صلى الله على محمد وعلى آل النبي.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
In the United States, Special Counsel Robert Hur has defended his assessment of President Joe Biden's poor memory as he gave testimony before members of Congress on Tuesday, 12th of March. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Robert Hur, the US Justice Department's special counsel assigned to report on President Biden's possession of classified documents, told Congress he was just doing his job when he shook up the US election campaign by criticizing the president's apparent inability to recall certain events. In his report released in February, Robert Hur, a Republican, former U.S. attorney under Donald Trump, recommended Biden not be charged for possessing classified documents. But he infuriated the president's Democratic allies by making repeated references to Biden's age and memory as one reason for not indicting him, saying jurors would see him as a sympathetic, well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory. Robert Hur said in his opening remarks to the House Judiciary Committee, "My task was to determine whether the president retained or disclosed national defense information willfully. I could not make that determination without assessing the president's state of mind. For that reason, I had to consider the president's memory and overall mental state and how a jury likely would perceive his memory and mental state in a criminal trial." He defended his comments about President Biden's recollection, saying, "I did not sanitize my explanation, nor did I disparage the president unfairly. I explained to the Attorney General my decision and the reason for it. That's what I was required to do." Republicans are also unhappy with Robert Hur's finding that Biden should not be charged arguing it was evidence of double standards at the Justice Department. A different special counsel, Jack Smith, has indicted Donald Trump for taking government secrets with him after leaving the White House, and, unlike Biden, conspiring to keep them out of the hands of investigators. The Justice Department also decided last year not to bring charges against Donald Trump's former Vice President, Mike Pence, after classified documents were found at his home. Both men were appointed by Biden's Attorney General, Merrick Garland, but operate independently, while Justice Department policy also prohibits the indictment of sitting presidents. The Judiciary Committee's chair, Trump ally Jim Jordan, sought to focus public attention on Robert Hur's conclusion that President Biden willfully retained and disclosed classified materials after his vice presidency. Jim Jordan said Mr. Hur produced a 345-page report, but in the end it boils down to a few key facts. Joe Biden kept classified information, Joe Biden failed to properly secure classified information, and Joe Biden shared classified information with people he wasn't supposed to. Gerald Nadler, the committee's top Democrat, focused on how the special counsel cleared the president and noted his cooperation with the investigation. Gerald Nadler said, "The Hur report represents the complete and total exoneration of President Biden." Recounting the details of the former president's alleged hoarding of classified materials at his Mar-a-Lago resort, Gerald Nadler continued by saying, "And how does that record contrast with President Trump, the documents he retained, and the criminal charges pending against him in Florida?" Nadler said, "Donald Trump is facing charges not because of some vast conspiracy, not because the so-called deep state was out to get him, but because the former president was fundamentally incapable of taking advantage of even one of the many, many chances he was given to avoid those charges." Robert Hurd made clear later on that he does not consider his report to be an exoneration of President Joe Biden, saying that, "This is not a word that I used." A transcript of Robert Hurd's interview with Joe Biden, which lasted for hours over several days, was released shortly before the hearing began and shows the president fumbled occasionally with a sequence of events and certain dates, but otherwise was sharp throughout the interview and also corrected Robert Hur and others when they made errors. The Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff seized on Robert Hur's insistence that he did not disparage Biden, saying he did just that by including details of the president's ability to recall details in his report. Adam Schiff asked, "You chose a general pejorative reference to the president. You understood when you made that decision, didn't you, Mr. Hurd? And you would ignite a political firestorm with that language, didn't you?" Robert Hur replied, "Congressman, politics played no part whatsoever in my investigative steps." Hur said he followed Justice Department policy in writing of his report. Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. Special Counsel Robert Hur has defended his assessment of President Joe Biden's poor memory as he gave testimony before members of the United States Congress on Tuesday, 12th of March. Robert Hur told the House Judiciary Committee that the evaluation was fundamental to his investigation into whether the president intentionally hoarded classified documents during his time out of office. Robert Hur told the committee, "My task was to determine whether President Biden retained or disclosed national defense information willfully, meaning knowingly and with the intent to do something the law forbids." He added, For that reason, I had to consider the president's memory and overall mental state. Questions about President Biden's memory arose after Robert Hur released a special report in February that described the president fumbling to recall details, including dates surrounding his son Beau's death. In the report, Robert Hur wrote that Joe Biden, 81 years old, would present to a jury as a sympathetic, well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory. He did not recommend pressing charges against Joe Biden. Nevertheless, his conclusions elicited criticism from both Democrats and Republicans. Democrats have accused the investigator of gratuitously referencing Biden's age, which has become a charge election issue in 2024. Meanwhile, Republicans seized on Robert Hur's report to suggest Biden was getting preferential treatment compared with former President Donald Trump, who has been indicted on charges relating to retaining classified documents. Robert Hur, a registered Republican, addressed the controversy in his testimony on Tuesday, 12th of March. He told the legislators, "My assessment in the report about the relevance of the president's memory was necessary and accurate and fair. I did not sanitize my explanation, nor did I disparage the president unfairly." You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio by your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Ammar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. In the days of Ramadan,
let's discuss about a few things mentioned from Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. There's a beautiful hadith from Rasulullah which says, "Wasiyam junnatul abdil mu'min yawm al-qiyamah." The day of judgment, the day of resurrection, is a hard and tough day because lots of people are going to face their rewards. They're going to see their rewards good, either good or bad. Those who have done a good deed in this life, definitely they are going to see good things. They're going to face heaven. They're going to see, they're going to face Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala with His mercy. And there's a group of people, those have done wrong things in this life, they are going to face a tough time in the day of Qiyamah, in the day of judgment. They are going to see wrath of God. They are going to see wrath of angels, those who are gathering them to take them towards hellfire. But there's a lot of ways to protect ourselves from hellfire, because according to Quran, the fuel of hellfire is human being and stones. So mu'mineen, those who have faith in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, don't want to see the wrath of Allah in any case. This hadith is a good source of our Islamic values, which says, "Wasiyam junnatul abdil mu'min yawm al-qiyamah," means those who are people of fasting in this world, there's a group of people that just think about eat. Very unfortunately, some people think they have come to this world only for eating. This is not correct. We are here in this world to live a godly life, and for that we need to eat. We need to survive, and for survival we need to eat. Those are two different perspectives. So mu'min is not always behind eating. Mu'min just lives a godly life, lives his life through godly values, through the guidance of God. This is the mu'min's life. And mu'min is always trying to earn something through his actions for his eternal life, and prevent and protect himself from wrath of God, from hellfire. This hadith says, "Wasiyam junnatul abdil mu'min yawm al-qiyamah." Those who are people of fasting, those who fast a lot, those who live in this realm with fasting, they are going to have a shield in their hand. And this shield is going to be made of their fasting in this world. Those who fast here, they will have shield in their hands. And it's a phrase. Otherwise, the siyam, the fasting itself is going to turn into a barrier between them and hellfire. It's going to turn into a wall between themselves and fire. And this fasting in this world is going to prevent them from the heat of fire, from the tough time of the fire. Especially all the tough things happening in the day of judgment, because there's an earthquake, there's a fire, there's a heat, there's a long day, there's a lots of tough things in a way of wrath from God. But those who are people of fast, those who fast in this life, people have fastings, they are going to be protected from all kinds of wrath of God in the day of Qiyamah. May Allah give us tawfiq to become people of fast and to be saved in the day of judgment, inshallah ta'ala. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa salamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Ammar in the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.